honest yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So I forgot to mention this on Monday, Conan, is Turlough O'Brien has stood down from Carlow management. And it was on my running order, and I don't know, I got carried away in the newspaper review on whatever I was given out about or whatever we're talking about, and I completely forgot about it. So it's an interesting one, really, that he's standing down, and I don't know where to stand on it. In one way, I'm saying, you know, fair play to him for giving the next manager a bit of time, you know, for next year, because it's going to run into next year. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, like, the championship's going to run on a knockout and some sort of maybe backdoor or some sort of second chance, for example. You know, Carlow, the Division 4 team, like, are they going to be in the championship past November? Could he have given the year championship a go and let the next manager in? You know, like, I mean, Desi Farrell only got in late November. You know, it's not the end of the world if you're in late November. So I don't know where I stand on it.
It's an interesting one. There definitely is an element of fair play to him, you know, for stepping aside or whatever. But for me, like, it's what's your priority? And like, championship is the big thing. Like, so yeah. I think if you're going to sacrifice anything, it should be next year's National League. Like, say the new manager comes in and it's just on top of him in a week or two time.
You see,
which would be really
Carlo do target the league almost, yeah. Well, I don't know more, but to put a huge importance on the league. And I think that was part of his decision.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was just thinking, like, finish off your term, do the championship, and then let somebody else build then next year. If the league doesn't go well next year, grand. But, like, you know, the way they're doing it now is you're having a new manager coming in for championship. It's just, I just think it's a bit archways, to be honest.
Yeah, so that's it. At first when I read it, I went, geez, that's a lovely thing he's after doing. And then I started thinking about it and thinking, geez, is he throwing in the towel here? I don't know. But anyway,
he's enjoying his free time and just doesn't care.
No way I'm getting back into that crap. But like, in fairness, to give him his due, he started the Carlow Rising. He brought in Poacher, and you can give out Poacher all you want. And there's a long list you can give out about that fella about. But, like, I mean, they had some very good days. They got promoted out of Division 3. We know they beat Louth and Kildare in the same year in the championship. You know, they almost beat Monaghan in the qualifiers. They played very well against Cavan away another year in the qualifiers. They got into a league final in Croke Park. Now, this is from Carlow. You know, they kind of the Carlow Rising hashtag. So, like, I mean, he'll be very fondly remembered in Carlow football.
Yeah, and the Louth and Kildare thing are obviously two big scalps with the year before that. I think it was always targeted at them that they had only won against Division 4 teams, but they still put together three wins in the championship, you know, which is a great level of consistency for Carlow to get there. And I always remember the Dublin match, and I know it fell on its arse, like, you know, in the last 10-15 minutes, but they rattled them, like, you know, they gave it a go, and I just thought that would do so much for the county as well, like, you know, just seeing these Carlow players and some of them showing that they're good enough, Brendan Murphy and Sean Murphy, and then having them highlighted on Sunday game, and, you know, little clever tactics that they were employing and stuff. I just thought that game against Dublin was just, it was so big for them. It was such a big deal. And yeah, it was all down to Turlough, really, who got them going for it.
Yeah, so Paul Broderick was talking about him, and he said, we could be playing Sligo in the league, and for 4 weeks before it, he'd be up in Sligo watching club games. If there was one player in the match he wanted to see, he'd be there watching it. You'd only ever find him, you'd only ever find out when you'd ask him, did you have a good weekend? And he'd say, I was up in Sligo. Like, I mean, that's serious preparation for a small county. And I suppose he doesn't have the luxury like Jim Gavin or one of the high profile managers of sending some runner down and bringing back a report. He has to go up and do it himself.
Yeah, that's where you get my lackey in, just to go up to Sligo and do it for you.
Yeah, record that for me. I want a full bulletproof report on my desk on Monday morning of that team or whatever. So, like, I mean, moving on to the club football and hurling, Conan. So the October the 11th is the club finish. So there's a whole load of county boards trying to finish up their championships in late September to give more time to their county teams. So the latest end is October the 11th. That's outrageous. It's 6 days before the start of the championship. And there is no county board going to run it. I don't think a county board is going to run into October full stop unless they absolutely desperately have to. Because we have to remember, and we said this on the last show, like, the county team is the prestigious team in the county, and there's no county board chairman is not going to want to give them a decent run in of preparation. You know, like, I mean, the idea that, you know, the semi-finalists and the finalists won't be available to the county manager into October, I don't know. I can see situations where the club teams in the semi-finals and the final might train Tuesday, Thursday with their clubs, and then maybe on a Wednesday night they'll go to county training, and it won't be a physical training, it'll be a tactical walkthrough. You know, they'll have to stay involved some little bit in that month with the county as well.
I don't know about you, but I just can't get over how loud the vitriol is around some counties not using those extra 2 weeks. Like, I can't fathom it. Like, and here's the thing. Like, say we talked about this before. If the clubs had have gone first, or if the clubs had have gone second after the county season, then it would have been this whole we're being treated like shit again, shoved to the back burner, county being prioritised, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And if these counties used a full window for the club championship, then there'd be even more concerns than there already is about county training overlapping. So this seems to be a bit of a happy medium. And if there's a manager out there who thinks it's a good idea to, like, flog the players and have them train them with a club for a club semi-final and then also train them for the county flat out, like, you know, then go and help them. Like, that's not good for them. But what you're saying there is ideal, and it can definitely be worked on. It can, like, train your club for a club semi-final and only have four teams left, and then go down for the tactic sessions and the video sessions and the meetings and whatever else.
Yeah.
I just gotten really annoyed, like, at the idea that, you know, anybody who's saying that the answer is to get rid of the county game, like, that's not an argument. Like, that's an agenda. Like, we need the county championship, the inter-county championship, for, as you say, we need money. It inspires people. And 1.1 million people watch the All-Ireland Finals. How can you say you're not serving the masses by looking after the inter-county game? It makes sense.
Yeah, then that's the thing. And look, it's the whole CPA thing again, and it's Joe Brawley, and it's the anti-GPA thing and all this, and it's almost turned a lot of people about, it's almost fashionable to hate inter-county, you know, that kind of way. And it's just wrong. It's completely wrong. Now, there's obviously that championship needs to be condensed, but it can't get any more condensed than it's going to be this year. And they're still giving out. Like, I mean, it's bizarre. But anyways, a lot of counties now are releasing their schedules for their club championships. Interesting, I thought it was clever. Tipperary and Cork are waiting to see what the inter-county schedule is. So maybe they're waiting to see who to draw in the first round to see how much time. But, like, you can laugh. But that's the reality of, you know, like, I mean, I think that's clever to wait and see what's in store in the first round for your county before you commit to your club championships. I wouldn't have any problem with that. But the Wexford one, have you seen the Wexford one? It's absolutely brilliant. So Wexford are running their hurling championship off first, right? So Davy Fitz was on the Sunday game and he was saying to me, this year isn't about All Ireland. Look, it would be lovely to win one with Wexford. It would be lovely to win one with Six Mile Bridge. It's about getting out and being able to participate, being able to get onto our fields and being able to play the game. So, like, I mean, you know, I would say there's probably 2% of Davy probably meant what he said there. The other 98% was kind of laughing to himself. And then you see the schedule for the Wexford Hurling Championship. So that's going first. I was going to say Paul Galvin wouldn't be too happy with this, but he does all right out of it as well. So this is the schedule for the Wexford County Championship. Their county hurling final is on August the 23rd. Can you believe that? August the 23rd. Like, I mean, it's crazy. So they're starting on August the 2nd. Then they play a midweek, and, like, every team is guaranteed three games. They play second week, they play on the second, then midweek on the fifth, then on the ninth. Then they have an optional quarterfinal, which might or might not happen, on the 12th, then semifinals on the 16th, and final on the 23rd. That quarterfinal might not happen. So you're looking at one, two, three, you're looking at five games in 4 weeks. You know, like, I mean, which is, you know, pretty intense, and people will give out about that's, you know, taking the piss out of it. Is Davy influencing that? Who knows? Like, I mean, are the Wexford County Board giving their hurling team every chance to do well in the first round? Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, so I don't know what to think about that. Then you think, like, what do club players go mad for? They go mad for games every weekend in the height of summer. They're getting that. So then the footballers are going August 30th, 2nd and 6th in the group games. Then the 9th is a quarterfinal that might not happen. The 13th and the 20th. So they're running everything off in four weekends for five games as well. But they finish up on the 20th of September. So, you know, Paul is getting, the you know, 3 days less than the maximum that the GAA are allowing.
Yeah, Davey definitely didn't help things there, because I was like thinking, like, you know, what is all this giving out about the 2 weeks over? And then I saw Wexford coming out of August 23rd. And obviously, if everybody did that, then you'd have a bit of concern. But like, somebody made the point that, you know, there'll be a lot of crossover, but I'm sure they'll be prioritising Wexford hurling. But there'll be a lot of hurlers who'll be playing in that football championship in Wexford as well.
That's a good point, Jed. That's a good point.
You know, so they'll be going right up to September 20th. But like, you sort of touched on this as well. Like, what's wrong as well with a club wanting the county to do well? Like, you know, and if that's an extreme example. I wouldn't want to see every club championship being condensed like that. But if you can forego 2 weeks just to help your county team, then what's wrong with that? Like, you can do it. Like, now more than ever, there's a need to try and, like, sort of make some allowances and make some sacrifices. And you can do it. There's enough space in the window. We talked about 11 weeks is great.
Yeah, there is now. But they're going the second, then they're going the fifth of the midweek game, and then they're going the ninth. So they're going with 3 games in a week.
Do you know what I mean? I want nothing to do with Wexford.
No, it is too intense schedule, you know, to get it finished that quickly. You know, but the problem probably is in Wexford and a lot of dual counties, they might have to go one and then finish it and go the other. There are a lot of the Wexford players play dual, you know, and that's an issue. That's going to be a big issue. And instead of playing it, alternating it, they're going to try and finish one after another. We're saying Davey had no part in this hurling getting played first. I would love to have been, I'd love to hear the conversation between Davey and Paul when deciding which championship goes first.
Yeah, it was probably some sort of thing like the way the club and county thing is panned out now. Like, you know, this will mean that the footballers are more important if you go last.
Yeah,
we might get all the players.
Whose bad books would you prefer to be in? Who would you prefer, least prefer rollicking off, Davey or Paul?
Oh, Davey, like, Jesus, like, because I think Paul would be more passive aggressive with you. Do you know?
I think
he would let you know, like, you know, just by his silence, whereas I think Davey would just come straight at you.
Yeah, well, I say Davey could just eat the shit out of you. You could get a slap off Paul. That's something I would be worried about. Maybe.
That's a good point.
There's other county managers that, look, I'm taking that back about Paul. You wouldn't get a slap off him. You never know. I mean that in the best possible way.
You're afraid of getting a slap?
County managers are having their say about the whole thing. So Kevin McStay has been talking about, he's a former county manager, saying he wouldn't be happy with the schedule. He says the best clubs get to the finals and the best clubs tend to supply most players for the county team. If you have finals taking place late September, early October, when that's when the county manager is going to be calling on such players. Look, it's hard to disagree with that. Like, I mean, that's the reality. This is not ideal for anybody. But if they do it like we say and come to an agreement between the clubs and the county that you only do tactical sessions, we'll release them once a week, you know, in those 2 weeks, I think you can find some sort of a balance there. Rory Gallagher was more positive. He says, I'll be honest, that's possibly a 5 week lead in time. We have to face reality. Fair enough, you might not have your county semi-finalists or finalists. Ordinarily, after the break in the league, everyone takes a week off and you have 5 weeks club league games. Now, bar your county semi-finalists and finalists, you'll have 5 week lead in with them. I think it's fair. I think he's talking about April for clubs there, where you have your league, then you lose them and you don't have much of a run in there as well. So, like, I mean, look, it depends on your take on it, you know. Like, I mean, I'm sure Rory Gallagher in Derry isn't going to want Slocknail or one of the big teams in the semi-final when they've got a lot of his important players playing for them, but that'll be the reality of it.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to the April for clubs thing. The Kevin McStay one, I sort of think, though, he's right, but every county is going to be in the same boat, because by his logic, like, you know, the best teams have the best players. So in every county, the best teams will be in the semi-finals of all the best players who will mostly represent the county. So they're all going to be in the same boat, like, you know, and it's just, look, it's a one-off. It's not going to happen again. This isn't the thing that we're putting to Congress. It's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. It's just how can we manage to get this thing started?
I think it's fair that it's definitely not ideal, and everybody's fair enough. Liam Cahill has been saying there's restrictions until September, and it leaves a very short window for inter-county players to prepare. If anyone is naive enough to think that inter-county managers managers are not going to try and assemble their players on the odd occasion during that period, that's before the September 14th date, well, they're not really in tune with what's going on. Couldn't agree more with Liam on that one. Like, I mean, that's the part that made the headlines. He said other things like county managers might just have to taper their preparations and ease some of the rigidness as regards allowing players back to their clubs and doing away from the regimental side of it. You know, so he was fair enough. But for him to say that county managers aren't going to try and assemble their squad before September the 14th, I would be amazed if any of them don't do that.
Yeah, definitely. And then it's just about, like, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, they're not going to want to bring these people in and just flog them for the sake of it when they know that they're training for their club and playing club championships. So I don't have a problem. I know it's against the rules, but if they were coming in on the QT and, as you say, down for a tactical session, in for a video session, whatever, what's wrong with that? And it is going to happen, but these managers are smart enough to know that they're not coming down for a fitness session on top of everything else they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Declan Bodder has been saying, he's been talking about something else, and I thought this was interesting if you read into it a bit. He said, if there was ever an opportunity for an open draw championship, it probably was this year. I presume the four provincial councils will be holding firm under championships, so I don't expect any difference in terms of there being an Ulster championship. It could be knockout, I don't know. Will there be a back door? So he said, everything being fair and the playing field was equal, then the open draw 32 teams is the fair way of doing it. I don't see how it's any fairer than the provincials, but what Declan Bonner wants to do is he wants to draw Dublin in the first round. He doesn't want Dublin to ease through a Leinster championship and be a much more difficult proposition. And, like, am I reading too much into this, or is this what Declan Bonner's thinking? I think that's what he's thinking, because he thinks that Dublin are beatable with a new manager and very little lead in time, are potentially beatable if Dublin drew a difficult team in the first round of an open draw.
Yeah, and, like, remember, you mentioned that there, he had little lead in time coming into it as well, and, like, they had lost the game and drawn two already, you know, so they hadn't been going that well before this. And yeah, like, that, I actually was thinking about Dublin because it suits them best, and Kerry obviously as well. I think it suits them best anyway, but especially now, because, yeah, like, it's fine losing your players so close to when you're coming back, so they're all out playing club championship, but Dublin are going to ease back into it, so they'll have enough time to get training done and get the proper levels up, whereas, yeah, Donegal might not. They're going to take a game of Tyrone.
It is an opportunity, though, for the management committee, who have control of this now. This doesn't have to go through Congress. This is a completely unusual year. Wouldn't it be a chance for them to do a Champions League style, four groups of four? You know, the top two, like what you actually proposed, the top two go into the top 16, go into the All-Ireland, and the bottom 16 go into at the All-Ireland B. Wouldn't be that many games, or maybe it might be too many games for what they're looking for. But the 32 county draw is definitely something that could happen over 5 or 6 weeks. Do you know, it's an opportunity for them to do something and have a look at a model that they would never get through Congress, you know, and try something new out.
Yeah, and, like, most people would suck it up. There'd be a bit of complaining about whatever format you do, but they would all deal with it just because they know it's 1 year. And look, if it goes really well, then you stumbled across a really good format.
Yeah, you've only seen thing, it. Yeah.
I always remember Porrick Duffy was on with you, and it said something about you have to be realistic about what you can get through. Oh, this was around the Super Race when you had him in.
Yeah.
And he said, like, you said to him, like, the provincial is a big problem. Why aren't you trying to change that? And he said, you have to be realistic of what you're bringing to Congress. The provincial councils aren't going to change. You know, but it was fairly depressing. Like, you know, you had somebody so high up in the GA who got his restructure through and just thought there was no point in even entertaining changing the provincial structure.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I'd say the probable championship format will be the usual one, just to be no group super eights. It'll be provincials, It'll be quarterfinal, semi-final, final. You're looking at maybe seven or eight weeks to see it all out. I don't see them being any more creative than that. But there probably will be, based on the club championships and the talk that it's going to spill into next year, it definitely won't be a straight knockout.
Yeah, which would have been good, but, like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So I wanted to just mention GA players and racism, Conan, because we know everything that's kicking off worldwide, especially in the United States. And I think people are kind of running to black GAA players, you know, different GAA players from different backgrounds, and asking them what their experience has been like on a GAA field. So, like, I mean, Jason Sherlock has been speaking about it. Jamar Hall has been speaking about it. Franz Sauerland has been speaking about it, you know, on different newspapers. And Bodo Saya has been speaking about it as well. And he said, it hasn't happened in a long time, but I've definitely had sly comments on the pitch. He was talking on RTE. He says, in the last few years, I've been lucky enough that I haven't really experienced anything at all. I don't know whether it's because my age profile has gone up, but people show a lot more respect than when I was younger. When I was younger, it was a lot harder. I was the only one playing, and there was one or two of us, and we used to stand out like sore thumbs. It wouldn't be full out racist abuse, but sly comments like, you're not supposed to be here. And I don't know, like, I mean, they all gave examples of, you know, comments that were made to them. And I don't know, some people like to paint a picture. I don't know, do I get over defensive about the GAA saying it's not racist? You know, some racist comments can't paint the whole organization, you know, like, I mean, it's definitely a difficult one. And it is legislated for in the GAA rules. Like, I mean, rule 7.2 deals with discrediting the association, and there's a range of penalties ranging from 8 week suspension for individuals and right up to expulsion. So, like, I don't think it's a big issue in the GAA. I think when all these issues are going on, these social issues are going on, you know, dragging the GAA into it, I don't particularly like that. I do think definitely if it happens in the GAA, education is the key, and, you know, making sure you won't stop it fully, because there's always going to be assholes who want to say something like that. But as long as that people are aware of it and people are educated to maybe make sure, it's very, very rare.
You're right. Education is, I suppose, the big one. Like, I can only think of my own experience. And I think education, along with how it's monitored and how it's sort of looked after by people at the top, like, you know, I think talked before about one of my best mates, this is from Derry, like, but he's from an ethnic minority family, and like he got dog abuse sometimes when we were playing games. And there was one instance, and I know that the referee heard it because he saw this guy punch out because he reacted. Yeah. But the ref let him away with it because he understood sort of why he was reacting like that, and it caused a big fight because everybody else heard it. And the ref never did anything, never reported anything. And then the manager of the opposition team, but again, it comes down to education, but he was trying to deal with it afterwards, you know, and he tried to bring your man who racially abused him into our changing room, and everyone basically told him to fuck off. But our guy was dragged out of the changing room, you know, and your man was just made to say sorry to him. And then the manager thought that he was dealing with it well there, like, you know, said, right, that's it now. He said, sorry, it's done. And, you know, that's, again, it's not his fault. It was just really badly managed. And if there was more education and more of a legacy of dealing with these things, then it would be more easier managed. But I think about ourselves and stuff as well. Like, it's all well and good. Like, we would jump on top of anybody who said anything bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I definitely think it's more prevalent in young people, and there's an element of showing off. There's an element of trying to be the big man in front of your friends. But a fella replied back to me on Twitter, and it just shows how people need to be educated on this. And I'm not going to say his name, but he said, somebody gets a clatter on the pitch, your opponent is black, you call him a black plus swear word. To me, that's anger and not racism. Different if one uses a racial slur. Like, I mean, I said to him, are you for real? You can't get any more racist than saying something like that. And he didn't think that was racism. It just goes to show how stupid people are. That I'm not sure they even know what they're talking about, you know, like, I mean. And Jason Sherlock is talking about education, and he says, from my point of view, I would like to see more education. And this is an interesting point. He says, education for victims of racial abuse so that they understand that they're doing nothing wrong. And that's something I never thought of, you know, and only Jason would have an insight into that. He said, everyone is different, everyone is unique, and they're not the ones, frankly, with the problem. And then he says, we need education, you know, to prevent these comments from happening. I was interested, I was Googling it, and the GAA have a responding to racism campaign. And this was from back in March, before all this, you know, kicked off. They're not getting on the back of these protests and things. It will provide proactive training in this area, and supports the association's long-term campaign against racism and discrimination through the Give Respect, Get Respect program. So, like, the GAA are, you know, they were ahead of the protests on that. So at least it would be worse if they're reacting to that, you know, by saying, look what we're doing.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I suppose they've been dealing with a bigger proportion of it coming into the game more and more throughout the years, especially, like, you know, with a lot of the refugees and stuff that have come into Ireland over the last few years, and they're all playing GA. So it's more important now more than ever. And yeah, they have been doing a lot of work. And I think a lot of clubs have been as well. And it's just it is becoming more normal, which is great. And yeah, hopefully it doesn't take too long for that stuff to be weeded out. Because it's such a stupid thing. Like what your man's saying there as well, thinking, when you're fighting with somebody, then it's fine. You're using somebody's race against them. That's the problem. Like, you know, it's not like, you know, slagging about anything else. Like, race or skin color.
The definition of racism he didn't think was racism. But, like, I mean, we'll move on from that. Malachy Clerken has a great piece in the Irish Times. He's talking about the COVID supervisor, and I was laughing reading this because I was just thinking of it just kind of hit home of the poor unfortunates that are going to be landed this COVID supervisor job. And someone on Twitter said to me, they were trying to be smart, says, have you applied for any, you know, jobs up at the club? And I didn't reply, but I was thinking in my head, hang on a second, I captained Portlaoise to a Leinster club. I've done my part for the club. I don't go around with a COVID supervisor bib on me. That's not my role in the club. Listen, I'm a former player. So, like, I mean, that's the way I look at all these kind of jobs. I will never be a COVID supervisor, ever, ever, ever. It just won't happen. I'll be an ex-player, and there's hierarchies in the club. COVID supervisors are generally people who have never ever played for the club, who love the club, and who want to have a role within the club. A former Leinster club winning captain would never lower to be the COVID supervisor.
I don't think ex-player is a role in a club.
It is for me. Well, no, hang on. I'm playing junior. I'm still a current playing member.
So are you brought in then, you know, for the big games where you've got a box and you tell people old stories then when they're down watching the game?
No. Look, if this is the way it works, and this is the way when I was coming up through the ranks, the ex-players would be in the clubhouse after a championship match and they'd be pointed out to the young lads, geez, there's such and such, he did such and such. And that's their role within the club. They're almost an ambassadorial role, Conan, if you will.
You could be like me if you wise up, sort of thing.
But anyways, I'll read some of Malachy's piece because it's excellent. He says, COVID supervisor, you can just imagine the GEA tricking around to find the right term to use when they're drawing up the roadmap. COVID officer sounds a little bit too run-of-the-mill. COVID secretary makes it sound like you'd be drowning in paperwork. Even if that's the case, you're better letting them find out as they go rather than pulling them off it before it starts. COVID ambassador is too plumpy. COVID hero, too condescending. So COVID supervisor it is. It implies just enough authority to attract those who quite fancy the idea of bossing people around while keeping them at a safe distance from any actual power. The COVID supervisors will be the Garrett Keenans of the association. Yes, you will check everyone's temperature on the way to training. Yes, you will be in charge of the disinfectant, and you can deputise who you like to help you clean the kit. No, you won't have any input into team selection. So, like, I mean, he summed it up perfectly. COVID supervisor. I don't know how much thought was put into the name, but it's just perfect.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of asking somebody to go to the shop for you because they're the fastest. And yeah, you're the best person for the job. Like, I remember going to an AGM a few years back, and it was a big hold up for ages because they were trying to get a chairman to put himself forward. Nobody wanted to be chairperson this year, and everybody knew who it was going to be. And we were all just waiting for this guy to put himself forward, but he didn't want to be chairman. And anyway, after 45 minutes and after two recesses, he was eventually cajoled into doing this. Like, you know, nobody else was coming forward because they knew it was done.
Malachy has a great quote from Matt Damon in the poker movie Rounders. He says, if you can't spot the sucker in the first hour at the table, then you're the sucker. It's a classic. I got to leave you on this one, Conan, before we get into Chrissy McCaig and Neil McManus to talk about Team Ulster. Gucci are selling GA shorts for £500, and it's friend of the show, Paul Meskell, who is 100% responsible for this phenomenon. Gucci and the GA in the same sentence, and GA gear in the same sentence. And this is because we know Paul is out running around topless sometimes, actually around London near his home in the lock-in, and he is 100% committed to GA shorts. And it is highly commendable that he is still keeping the GA a big part of his wardrobe now that he's world famous.
I saw someone saying it was the Ballyhannis shorts. It's like Ballyhannis by Gucci. Like, incredible. Yeah, I'm just surprised they haven't brought in Gooch Cooper yet to sell the men's range for him.
Like, could you see one sale of Gucci GA shorts in Ireland? I don't think they'd be doing well to get anyone, because, like, I mean, I think it was O'Neill's were tweeting them saying they might not be Gucci, but you can get your green and red O'Neill shorts now in Elvery's for just 24 quid. And I even looked at 24 quid going, what the hell? You'd be getting free shorts all your life. The idea you'd pay 24 quid for a pair of GA shorts is just absolutely outrageous.
There must be an ex-player's discount code there somewhere.
Or no, a club ambassador's discount, maybe. Okay, listen, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with the Team Ulster chat.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamie talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Go earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, so there's been a lot of talk in the last few weeks about Team Ulster hurling team, and two of the best hurlers in the province, Neil McManus and Chrissy McCaig, join me on the line to discuss it now. How's it going, lads?
How are you going, Willie?
All good.
I'm hoping the two of you are on speaking terms after that 2015 Ulster final. Chrissy, is that still lingering in the memory?
I can't even remember who won that game, Willie.
I'll tell you.
Go on, Neil will tell you. Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you that since that 2015 Ulster final, I've only got one title since then. Chrissy has three, unfortunately.
I was actually looking at that. You bounced back well from that, Chrissy. A little bit of, the bounce back ability.
We've got a character up where we're at, so we're not too bad.
Right, well, come here. Let's talk about this Team Ulster then, right? So we'll start with you, Chrissy. You're open to it. You're saying it's worth a gamble, so we'll let you kind of make the case for it.
Yeah, look, I think it's been a discussion that's been had quite a lot in hurling circles around Ulster in the last while, whether you're for or against it, and it's certainly easier to make the case to go against it, and that's granted. I wouldn't say I'm 100% pro for it, but I'm certainly open to different avenues on how we can actually properly look at promoting Ulster hurling, or at least give it some type of prestige. I think ever since that Ulster lost its provincial hurling championship, it's done huge damage, because there used to be a lot of motivation to play in that competition, because the winners got obviously a pathway through to the Liam McCarthy. And, I can remember going to watch Derry and Cook Park against Offaly. I can remember going to watch them against Galway and teams like that. Okay, you're going down to the game knowing fine rightly that the chances of victory were incredibly slim. But that's not really the point. The point is there's a huge amount of prestige and honour, I feel, in playing the top level of your sport. We can't all win. We can't all be a Kilkenny in hurling or a Kerry in football. That's just not the landscape of the GA. And we have to accept that, as hard as it is. But I feel at present, you know, Antrim obviously are on the cusp of getting in to, you know, top flight hurling again. And, you know, that has to be commended. But if Antrim were not to make top flight hurling next year, it would be the same as this year, where Ulster would not have one county currently playing top level hurling, and you know that has went on probably long enough. Antrim are obviously well ahead of the rest of the counties in Ulster. They're, you know, they are traditionally a hurling county, but I feel at present there is less and less of an appetite, you know, particularly within my own county, to play county hurling, because, you know, the prestige of playing Christy Ring Cup hurling is, you know, it's not that appetizing. And I'd be worried for young people coming through to see no pathway to play, you know, top level hurling, especially in a province dominated by inter-county football, or sorry, just football in general, you know. So it's worrying times for me.
What do you think, Neil? I saw a quote from you saying, I know from talking to other Antrim hurlers, people involved, there's no interest in it. Team Ulster isn't a runner for anyone in Antrim. And I can kind of see why you would think that. You know, Antrim, like Chrissy said, is a traditional hurling county and you've played in All-Ireland finals in your history. Like, I can see why you would kind of dismiss this whole idea. Like, I might even say, like, ego in a good way. Like, we're Antrim, we don't want to dilute into a Team Ulster. Like, is that where it's coming from in Antrim?
It is. Like, the bedrock of the GA is the parochialism and the club rivalry and the county rivalry. That's, you know, I never grew up wanting to play for Team Ulster. You know, I really enjoyed the Railway Cup whenever that came about, but that was almost in a carnival type atmosphere, and it was brilliant and very enjoyable, and great weekend was had on many of those occasions. But I grew up being brought to watch Cushion Ball senior hurling team play by my father along with my brother, and to see Antrim playing in big Ulster finals. And as Chrissy rightly points out, as soon as winning the Ulster title didn't guarantee you an All-Ireland quarter final, and I think the last year that it did was 2004 possibly, then the validity of that competition was gone. It ran on probably for another 10 years to probably 2014, something like that. But it was meaningless because it didn't transport you to an area of the Liam McCarthy Cup. So the validity of the competition had gone at that stage. And actually, we found out that the competition wasn't going to be run again the next year by chance. We were playing in the McGurk Cup, which is a pre-season competition in memory of St John's man. It's run between Ulster counties here in Belfast just before the National League, and one of the Ulster Council delegates was at it and said, you know, this is effectively your Ulster Championship this year. And it was Antrim and down that day, and you know, we're looking across the tables at each other just wondering what was going on. You know, that's the kind of respect that the Ulster Championship was treated with, and that's the kind of respect that hurling was treated with within Ulster. So I think, you know, we have to, I'm not in favour of Team Ulster. I just think there are so many issues. Leave aside even the logistical nightmare that it is. You know, there's so many people who think that Ulster, you know, everybody at Ulster is an hour away from each other. They don't realise that if you were a hurler in the Ards Peninsula and you had to make it to Cookstown, which is the central point of Ulster, you know, you're talking 2.5 hours, and so is the guy in the top corner of Donegal. He's 2.5 hours away from the central point as well. So, like, leaving aside the logistical nightmare that it is, my big fear is what would happen to the county players left behind. So if you take, and I used the example of Down, yeah, last time I was talking about this, was what happens if you take, say, Danny Toner, Connor Woods, and say even the two Sands brothers out of Down, four quality players. Is Down now so much of a less attractive prospect for any young hurler that, you know, if he can't make it to the Team Ulster level, he doesn't really want to play? You know, could we possibly kill hurler?
Well, No, I know, I agree. Like, and this is one thing that I think even Chrissy will agree with, that if Team Ulster pulls the best players out of all the Ulster counties and the rest of the lads have to continue on at Christy Ring without their best players, that would get no support anywhere. Can we all agree? Would you agree on that, Chrissy? Totally. And you agree on that, Neil? So I think people need to kind of identify what is workable here and what's not. That's not workable. So if anyone talks Team Ulster under that structure, forget about it. And like, I mean, you would be doing well to sell that to anybody, I would reckon. What I was thinking, what could be sellable is play your Christy Ring Cups, play your Joe McDonagh Cups, and after that, like, the Joe McDonagh Cup winners rejoin the All-Ireland Series and Team Ulster could play in a preliminary All-Ireland semi-final. Because I was looking potentially at the dates here. So the Joe McDonagh Cup last year was June the 30th. Now, Laois had to play Dublin a week later in the preliminary, which was a terrible turnaround. But the semi-final was June the 15th. Now, if a team in Ulster didn't make the Joe McDonagh Cup final, they could potentially have 3 weeks to prepare for a quarter final with Team Ulster. It's almost like it's a it's a shot at Liam. I know it's not a great lead-in time, and Christy Ring is similar. If you're not in the Christy Ring final, if you're only in the semi-finals, I think the semi-finals were 22nd of June, you would have a bit of a lead-in. Like, Christy, is when you're thinking of Team Ulster, is it something on those lines that you're thinking of? Play with Derry, play with Antrim, play with Down, play with all your counties in the competitions, but maybe give one day a week until every, or one day every 2 weeks until your team's knocked out, and then commit to Team Ulster to get into an All-Ireland quarter final and have a shot at Liam McCarthy.
Yeah, look, that's the only way it possibly works. And, you know, I know, you know, the counter argument to that is, look, boys, it wouldn't simply work because the preparation wouldn't be at the level of a Cork, Limerick, Galway or Kilkenny or whatever else. And that's granted too. But when you're going for an amalgamation, it's never going to be perfect anyway, and that would have to be accepted. I have said it on the record a couple of times now, Willie. I don't think this has a snowball's chance, but I do think the conversation is worth having to highlight the issues that exist within Ulster Hurling. And I'd be very upfront in saying, if it wasn't for a handful of strong clubs scattered across Ulster, I genuinely think Ulster Hurling would be very close to becoming extinct. There's so many clubs in Ulster that do not entertain hurling, have no interest in hurling, they aren't from traditional hurling areas, and then you factor in, they don't see any Ulster hurling on TV, and that has a massive impact also. Now, okay, yeah, you might say there's maybe games in TG Cahir and so forth, but, I mean, I'm talking about high-calibre games. You know, how many kids around Ulster could name hurlers in Ulster playing for Antrim, Down, Derry, like so on? You know, you'd be hard pressed, to be totally honest with you. So I think the promotion of the game in Ulster at the minute is getting actually worse, and I don't think people want to talk about that, because as long as we see an All-Ireland final in Croke Park packed with 82,000 people in Tipperary and Kilkenny playing, we think the association's going brilliantly. I just don't buy that as quick, you know.
Yeah, what do you think, Neil?
Absolutely, I think that's bang on. I think that, you know, the reason why, even though I don't think Team Ulster is going anywhere, I think it's a non-runner. But the point that Chrissy makes there about Ulster hurling not being let slip off the agenda, that's why I'm interested in having this conversation as well, because there's nothing being done. Like, Gaelic football is so dominant in Ulster, yeah. It's totally overpowering. So. We have, well, it's for the reason. Antrim are the only team in Ulster who are close to the top level of hurling, and we're not there, and we're the only team that's close because we're the only county in Ulster that are not dominated by football. It's fairly even, and maybe even edges slightly in favour of hurling in Antrim. Every other county is football dominated. Even take Chrissy, for example. You know, if you were naming an Ulster team tomorrow, the best 15 hurlers in Ulster, like, you're going to be talking about Chrissy McCaig, Brendan Rodgers, and Shane McGuigan, three of the best hurlers. We've seen them playing against Ballyhale. And was that December? Was that January? You know, so we know they're capable of playing at the top level, but they're not going to commit to hurling for Derry because football is so much more attractive. Who would blame them? You know, yeah. that's Gaelic football is the reason that Ireland is where it's at in Ulster. And it's the exact same in Connacht. You know, we've Galway, they're incredibly strong, around with a chance of winning All Ireland, have a history and a tradition of doing that. And outside of that, in Connacht, there's no team that's close to competing at the top level. So yeah. The Ulster Council and the GAA must do something for these areas.
That's the thing. Just first, Neil, would you commit to a Team Ulster when Antrim end their competition, whether it be semi-final of Joe McDonagh, whether it be final? The final would be more difficult. Would you give 3 weeks to a Team Ulster to go into a preliminary quarter final? Would you see that completely as a non-runner, or would it be something that you think might work?
For the point already made, like, what chance have you if you're going to play with 1 month's preparation? You know, you're effectively recreating the Real Lake Cup, but it's just for Ulster. You know, yeah. Is all you're doing. You're going in with 1 month trying to mark PJ Reid or Shamey Callan, who've been working with a group of players for 10 months and assisting the play. Like, what would happen? A group of players getting together from any province, going out and playing an All-Ireland quarter final against Limerick. What's going to happen there? I don't think that this is the avenue to develop Ulster Hurling. I'm incredibly passionate about developing Ulster Hurling because we do need to do something. The state is dire, as Chrissy points out. There is a handful of clubs, less than 10 probably, who are keeping the province afloat. You know, like, it's in a very, very bad place. It's in a place where there has to be serious action. I think you look at the Gaelfast model that's been rolled out in Belfast. I think that's rolled out province-wide here in Ulster and needs to be supported financially to do that.
Yeah. So, like, do you think, Chrissy, that the Ulster Championship should be restarted then, and the Ulster champions go into a preliminary quarter final? You know, like, I mean, what's the solution here? Like, it is fair, like Neil's saying, most of the counties are dominated by football, and you start pumping money into these counties in hurling. Will it ever take off? Like, I wouldn't see hurling ever taking off in Tyrone or maybe Donegal, for example.
Yeah, look, you're totally correct. You have to be realistic about it, and you have to look at the history, because it leaves clues too. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, and in order to develop a standard of anything, you need to be privy to playing at a higher level. And Ulster Hurling is just not simply privy to playing at a higher level. And I know Neil will echo the same sentiments that, you know, Cush and Dáil face the same challenges as we do as a club. You know, there's only so many teams you can play at Ulster that will bring you on to that next level. You know, geographically, we're quite isolated in terms of the level of high calibre games. But at least if there was an Ulster Hurling Championship, it would give an incentive for the best players in the county to come back out, because you would get a big day out in the sun. You would get to play a higher level of hurling, and that in itself would create more interest. And more interest creates more of an appetite to get involved. That's a start for me.
Yeah.
You know, and a fairly basic start. You know what I mean? The Team Ulster initiative, you know, can work maybe to a certain extent on what you said. If they come together a certain time of the year, and they might have to go through then, probably in fairness, the Joe McDonagh route, to find out if they're good enough maybe to compete without the Antrim contingent.
Yeah, you could play the Joe McDonagh winners, you know, and the winner of that goes in, you know.
Something like that. You would have to be creative about it. I understand that, but I think we can all understand on the call that, you know, the biggest issue here is not exactly whether Team Ulster comes into existence or not. The biggest problem here is there's a huge lull in the province in terms of hurling. And, you know, it's been in a lull for maybe the last 15, 20 years, if you're being totally honest about it. Okay, Antrim sporadically have done well, but as I'm sure Neil will probably agree with, not to the levels that they would aspire to play at constantly, you know.
Yeah, the big problem, Neil, obviously, from this conversation, is that Ulster Hurling has no identity. And the Team Ulster, its intentions are right, whether you agree with it or not. There's no Ulster Championship. You're into Joe McDonagh. The other teams are into Christy Ring. There's no Ulster Hurling identity anymore.
No, there's not. And it's so sad, because, like, the amount of years I went to Casement, whenever my dad was taking us to watch those games, and they were incredible. It was an unbelievable day whenever I met Derry, you know, that really strong team of the early 2000s, late 90s, and Down were really strong at the time too. Like, you know, in 92, I remember Down being super. I think it was against Cork. They played in the All-Ireland semi-final, and Jordan Graham got an All-Star that year. And the following year, Antrim were back in the All-Ireland semi-final at that stage, and Paul Huntley McKillen got an All-Star in 93. But those days for the Ulster final and Ulster semi-final, you know, I had a small book full of autographs of all the players. Like, it was massive. There's 10,000 at all those games, you know.
Yeah.
But the current was there. You know, if you won that Ulster final, you were getting a crack at, you know, a Leinster champion or a Munster champion. You know, it was massive, and that car is long since gone. You know, and like, the truth is, the point's well made. It is very, very geographical, this issue. Like, Connacht teams don't have the same problems really, and nor do the northern teams of Leinster, who are struggling. They have the one problem, which is the GA, or the GA in that area is dominated by football, the same as what we have in Ulster. But they don't have the second problem, which is the geographical disadvantage. You know, it can't be understated that it's so tough. You know, as Christy said, you know, the last time we spoke about this, Slough and Ayle don't want to come and have a friendly against Cushendall, even though that will be a good competitive team, or a friendly against Dunloy or Lochgill, you know, because they're thinking we might be meeting those boys on down the road. So we're not going to show our hand here today. The only way for us to get a really competitive game is to travel to closest Dublin.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. Now, I do say, like, I mean, I understand the distance up there and stuff like that you were talking about, but, like, Mayo players in Dublin travel back 3.5 hours. Now, I know that's for their own county, so, like, for a made-up team, I suppose, Neil, you're saying teams wouldn't be travelling long distances, or players wouldn't be travelling long distances.
I think... But there's a bit of me, the selfish bit of me, and the selfish bit of Chrissy as well, as athletes or people who want to play at the highest level, these wouldn't be unbelievable to get a crack at somebody in a preliminary All-Ireland quarter final, you know. But I see that as something I can do with that room, to be totally honest with you.
I'm
5 years older than anybody else on the that room team now, and there's a seriously strong crop of young players there. I think will spend the vast majority of their career playing in Division One, and I'm excited about that group of players, I must admit. So I don't know whether there'd be massive anything hugely to gain from an Antrim point of view or an Antrim player in this
game.
But I'm thinking about it from the point of view of the province, that we need to do something, because even though I don't believe Team Ulster is right, we need to change something. You know, do we break Ulster into a hurling board and a Gaelic football board, and we go at it from that situation? Because the Ulster counties and all these Ulster counties are dominated by obviously football people. And like, I wouldn't be cheering on somebody who came into Cushendall to set up a Gaelic football team, let's be honest about it. So, you know, that's the truth though. And these people, and fair play to them, their whole identity is Gaelic football, so they have no interest in hurling. But those are the people in the positions of power in the GAA and Ulster. So we have those people who don't really care about hurling making the decisions for us.
Yeah, I think it was Aaron Gallant told me if a Gaelic football was found in Patrick's well, they'd burst it.
Yeah, not far away.
But come here, Chrissy, just on this, right? I completely see Antrim's point of view on this, that they have ideas of winning a Joe McDonagh and being in that preliminary quarterfinal on their own merits. Like, I can completely see that. They're a traditional county, and if I was from Antrim, I wouldn't really want it either. Can it be done without Antrim? Would you be competitive enough without Antrim? And is it something that a Team Ulster, you know, that from the teams that aren't in the Joe McDonagh could come together and put a proposal together and get teams on board for this?
Well, I've probably been out on my own on this one. And, you know, to be honest, most people that I talk to that are from, you know, the different hurling counties believe that they could be very competitive without Antrim. I believe no. I believe that, you know, to be brutally honest, I think a team without Antrim wouldn't win the Joe McDonagh. And I know there's probably people biting their teeth listening to that, but I just can't see it. The best hurlers in the province predominantly, not all of them, but predominantly are from Antrim. And if you were forming an Ulster team, it would have to be done in my mind properly. It would have to be given the proper structures financially, managed by the proper people. And naturally, you would have to pick pound for pound the best players in the province, irrespective of what county they come from. So for me, starting, if you look at a panel of 30 of the best hurlers in Ulster, you could be looking at anything between, you know, 15, 18 of them people on the panel being from Antrim. So to answer your question very bluntly, Willie, to compete at Liam McCarthy level, would you need Antrim players? 100% yes.
Right. Okay. So, but this is actually a non-runner now that we've had a talk about it. What sounds to me like is a runner is bring back the Ulster Championship. The Ulster Champions play the Joe McDonagh Cup Champions to play into the provisional quarter final. Would you be on board with that, Neil? And Chrissy, I'll throw this to both of you. Neil first.
Um, I'd love to see, first of all, I'd love to see the Ulster Championship back. I really would. I know that, like, Antrim had dominated it there for the past, sort of, I think they maybe done 13 or 14 in a row, and that's when it was called a halt. But I know for one thing, the people who are, who say very passionate about hurling with an Ulster weren't consulted, to the best of my knowledge. It was a surprise to me whenever I found out that the Ulster Championship was being cancelled. I'd love to see it back, but there'd have to be a car, as you say, Willie. I don't know what, you know, where would you bring it into the hurling, to the championship at? Would they make up, you know, would they make up another preliminary quarter final to assist with that?
Well, you could do that, actually, because the Joe McDonagh Cup runners-up get into the preliminary quarterfinals, and they're sitting ducks because they're demoralised. Do you know what I mean? So the Joe McDonagh Cup winners could go in one preliminary quarterfinal, and the Ulster champions could go in the other one.
I want to use the platform to stress this point. This won't solve the Ulster hurling problem, but anything we can do that's different is worth a try. In the sense of getting some more exposure for Ulster hurling at the top level. So I wouldn't be against it, and I think reviving the Ulster hurling championship definitely is something that should be the number one priority of the Ulster Council.
But Chrissy, you would have a lot more motivation to hurl for Derry in the Ulster championship than you would in the Christy Ring, you know, with a chance of getting into preliminary quarterfinal if you were to win it, than to play in the Christy Ring, for example.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And to be honest, you know, even to have the chance of winning an Ulster medal and a meaningful competition, as I'm sure Neil would also testify to, would be very, very meaningful in itself. You know what I mean? And it's just a chance. I think you just need to be exposed to a higher standard of hurling. And okay, you might say, oh, they're having a pop's chance against such and such. And that may be the case for, you know, at this stage, Derry and Down or whatever else. But the reality is, you've got to start somewhere. I understand the problems, you know, they go down way beyond this. But it's probably a pattern that exists across the whole GA, Willie, and I'm sure that you agree too. Is, you know, the structure of our competitions in the GA, and there are certain traditions also that are so draconian and outdated that they're actually detrimental to the way that the whole association is going. It's became stale, and it's just like I said, if the big top counties are doing well and they're full in Croke Park on a sunny day in September or August, then we have this kind of notion that we're the best association in the world and everybody's happy, and, you know, that kind of narrative comes out. I just don't buy that. I certainly don't buy it coming from, you know, a county at the minute that, you know, obviously is, you know, not used to success and whatever else. But we should be an association that promotes fairness for a start, never mind anything else. And I just think at the minute we're so far away from that that it's becoming scary. And the scariest thing is we're even becoming even more far away from it. So, like, where does the train stop here? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, Cheddar Plunkett always talks about that on the show about, you know, weaker counties, the improvement in the Joe McDonagh Cup counties especially. He talks about it and he says that Croke Park should have a dedicated hurling development, you know, person who is responsible for the investment in all these counties. And talking of investment, Neil, you mentioned the Gaelfast. Do you see that on the ground already? Do you see that money having kicked in with the coaching? And you see, like, you won't see improvements for, you know, a while yet, but do you see it having got off the ground?
Yeah, the amount of work that's been done in the small space of time that Paul and his team have had, who are running that project, is fantastic. And that, there's not enough money there. I think they're giving £1 million over 5 years, something like that, or over 3 years possibly. You know, it needs to be 10 times that. But that's what needs to be done throughout Ulster. That's the only way to get this. Make, you know, Keady and Cahillians of Armagh as strong as possible. Let's get in there to those communities and get hurling to the highest level possible. Do the same in Dungannon and Carrickmore and Tyrone. Do it in the three or four clubs in Derry who are really pushing it, and do it across Antrim. You know, let's see, can we get Belfast as a GAA hub again? You know, we've had one Belfast team win a championship. We've got it in Ross, won one in 2004, and I think you have to go to the 80s to find the last Belfast winner, and there hasn't been one since 2004. You know, so one inside the last almost 40 years. It's crazy stuff, you know, for our biggest population base. There's something like 350,000 people living in Belfast, and it's a totally untapped resource for Ireland. So those things need to be addressed. We have to invest in the little bit of structure and history we have available to us, and then start thinking about the top level flagship competition.
You burst my bubble, anyways, lads. The Team Ulster, I was all on board for it now, and I'm a little bit deflated now that it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Kavir, Chrissy, and Neil, thanks very much for taking the call, and sure, look, we'll see what happens.
Thanks, Willie. Okay. Cheers, Willie.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I won't see you later, and we're not allowed to talk here.